has been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Friday. It's the Friday, July 29th edition of the Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show, which inverse funds are kind of fading into the background right now. That's good. That's where they belong. And I would just say that this week has certainly been one of the best weeks in the market here. We'll get to that in a bit. Right now we've got the NASDAQ up 167 to 12,332. I hope you've been getting the newsletter each week. I've been highlighting what's been going on in the market, the bottoming out several weeks ago, the trend change that we recently saw, not only in the NASDAQ, but in the Dow. The Dow's up 129 today, 32,659. The S&P's up 38 today, 4,110. The small caps are down a little bit. Crude oil having a huge day today, up $3.34 per barrel to $99.76. Gold, nowhere, up $1.60. Silver, maybe they've bottomed. If you're a bottom fisher, silver's up 7 cents today. The 10-year staying very low at 2.69. And the last time I looked, the 2-year was up around 2.88. So we still are in an inverted yield curve. And last but not least, we've got Bitcoin up 844, a little bit more risk on appetite this week. It's at 33,722. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show, Best Inverse Funds Now show. Some days, in fact, more days than not, since the beginning of the year, have been more focused on the inverse funds, which hopefully have faded into the background and can stay there for a while. We finally have a turnaround in the market that started a couple of weeks ago. I would say it's earnings, and that's usually what it comes down to. You know, you can all of the stories out there that you hear, recession, inflation, at the end of the day, all of that impacts earnings, okay? If Amazon was in a recession, for instance, you would have seen earnings that dropped for them. They didn't. Amazon did better than expected. If Apple was in a recession, their earnings would have dropped. Instead, their earnings exceeded expectations. So earnings, it always comes down to earnings at the end of the day. And I have found over the years to cut through all the noise. And there's a lot of noise in the market. There's an awful lot of noise. I find that a lot of people, most people on the that come on the TV or write articles, they have an agenda. They own a bunch of the stock. They don't want to admit they were wrong. You know, they have to give out stories that fit their agenda. Well, you know, we just take it every single week. That somebody said to me the other day about the app, and it's true. I mean, the app does not watch TV. The app does not read Barron's. The app does not read Wall Street Journal. The app doesn't even listen to my show, okay? the fertilizer that we dispense, the app just goes out and brings in raw data. You can't say that about many news outlets, newspapers, magazines, cable news channels, the big TV stations. Are they bringing in raw news? Is there a spin on almost everything that is said? I mean, I watched last night different takes, Barry, on the two straight quarters that were down. And definitely the talking points were, don't say recession, say transition.
Yeah, it was spend central is probably what you noticed. They're just redefining our textbooks along the way.
And on the other side, you know, they emphasize that, hey, two straight quarters in a row are a recession. So, you know what? I just look at the raw data. You know, that's the other thing that I like about stock charts. Stock charts also are apolitical. They don't have an agenda. They just show me what the market and what investors think of the stock, of the index. When you see an index start to bottom and you see an index start to turn up after 7 months of going down, that's a significant thing. It's probably best not to ask why, but to observe and say, you know what? There's a reason underneath that this is happening. It's probably linked to earnings. It usually comes back to earnings. And as we began this earnings season, I was on the pessimistic side. I didn't have a lot of hope for another strong earnings season. But at the same time, you know, the CEOs that run these companies are pretty sharp cats. They continue to grow their earnings. They do whatever it takes. They lay people off if they have to keep expenses in line. They come up with new products. They try to keep overhead under control. They try to maintain their market share. And, of course, there's good CPOs. There's our CEOs. There's decent CEOs. There's bad CEOs. And then there's the really stellar CEOs. And I would just say that the best stocks now, for the most part, have stellar CEOs that keep it going. Now, they can't keep the growth going at triple digit forever. Eventually, mathematics catch up with them. Then they do transition into a different kind of a company that just wants to continue to grind away against the competition, keep their market share, control their expenses, and continue to grow their earnings. And that's what we try to seek out, whether it's a micro cap, whether it's a small cap, whether it's a mid cap, whether it's a large cap, or whether it's a dividend paying stock. You know, stocks go through different stages of life also. Some micro caps never get past that stage and never get any bigger than a micro cap. And some large caps become micro caps, Barry. I've seen that happen too. Eastman Kodak, for instance, Xerox, for instance, GE is headed in that direction.
IBM was on their way for a while.
Yes.
Trying to hold that off.
But. So the trick is obviously buying stocks that are coming into the prime of their life or still in the prime of their life or they're dominant. And I would just say this, in a sea of mediocrity, it really is. It's a sea of mediocrity. 6,100 stocks that I go through every day, I end up probably looking at a little less than 1,000 maybe 10 or 15% at the most, have some reason to look at it. It's either an A-plus momentum. It has a grade of B-plus or more overall from my proprietary grading system. It's moving up in rank. It's got some new catalyst, some new product, something in the pipeline, maybe an upgrade. Maybe they are guiding higher. We've had several of those. So we came into earnings season. I was a bit pessimistic. The first week was not very good, but there was a small sample. And I thought it was mostly bank stocks. They were very dull earnings. And then the second week got a little bit better. And then this week, I think, has been very good. Unless you own Shopify, unless you own Roku, which Kathy Woods, those are two of her biggest positions. She got smacked again this past week. Those were 25% sell-offs. And Teladoc, she had three disasters again this week. But she rides them. She has no, no sell discipline. She just buys. We buy innovation stocks, come hell or high water. She's had plenty of hell and high water in her fund, down about 75% now from its all-time high. Well, we got a lot to talk about here today with two of the biggest stocks out there reporting earnings after the close yesterday. And then another one that at one time was in its prime, not so much anymore. In fact, one of the stocks talk about, it started Silicon Valley. The whole thing of raising money, venture capital, started with this Silicon Valley stock. And over time, the competition has caught up with it. They have not kept their edge. And now they're just kind of struggling, really, as a stock. It has been kind of a sorry situation. And at the same time, the energy stocks continue to sizzle. You got oil up over $3 per barrel today. And we had the inflation report that the Fed watches. It came in today. So, Barry, we're going to have to talk really fast today. Time is a-wasting. We'll be right back. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. This is the Best Stocks Now show today. We'll be right back. Second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. You know, I go through every single week the technicals, the technical analysis, the charts, the pictures of all of the major asset classes, from Bitcoin to the NASDAQ to, you know, the emerging markets, Europe, etc. They say a lot. Those pictures tell a lot, and I just keep it simple. You know, one is a sideways trend, primary trend. Look back at it, squint your eyes, look at where it's at. Now, two is an uptrend. We haven't seen any of those for a long time, most of the year, except in the inverse funds. Three is a topping out, running out of gas kind of a trend, and number four is a downtrend. We've seen a lot of those since November of last year. And, you know, that's, you can have a beautiful valuation on a stock or a market, but if it's in a downtrend, that's, you know, you got to have, I like to see them all together at the same time, both oars in the water. And we've watched this market here from November to about 8 weeks ago. The NASDAQ was in a severe downtrend. It was 34%, Barry, from top to bottom there. That's stiff downtrend, okay? And you know what? It was the multiple. You look back, it was multiple contraction. The multiple contracted on the S&P, at least. We don't really measure the multiple on the NASDAQ for some reason. Instead, we do it on the S&P 500. The multiple on the S&P went from 24 down to 16. It corrected by 33%. The NASDAQ corrected by 34%. But the earnings remained the same, okay? And then all of a sudden, about 8 weeks ago, that NASDAQ finally, we didn't know it on that day. Nobody rang a bell. Nobody said, Barry didn't send me a text saying, this is the bottom, Bill, 10,565, back on June 16th. Okay, so that was, 6 weeks ago, June 16th? Yeah, 7 weeks ago. But then it started to go sideways, okay? That now we can use that word transition. It transitioned from a downtrend that began at 16,212 and ended at 10,565, down 34%. A few bear rallies along the way, sucker rallies, and then all of a sudden it started to bottom. And, there's different theories. One theory is the sellers have finally been satisfied. The sellers are washed out, okay? They're gone. Everybody who wants to get out of the market has now gotten out. In fact, a lot of people get out at the bottom. A lot of individual investors get out and that's a good indicator. When you see individual investors fleeing, you can't be too far from a bottom, all right? And then the bottom started building, and it started going sideways. That's encouraging for quite a while, okay, until about 2 weeks ago when it started to turn up. And I noted that in my newsletter. I said, do we have a bottom a couple of weeks ago? Maybe it was 3 weeks ago. And then last week I definitely said, pointed out we have a trend reversal. And that was my article this week in the in Seeking Alpha. Now, how long it's going to last, we don't know. But, you know, the trend reversal is now in place. That's a big thing. That's a very big thing. The multiple has been crunched about as much as it's going to get crunched. And the earnings are hanging in there. That's what I can say. Now, maybe we'll get a little expansion of the multiple back here, and maybe we'll get a little bit higher estimates here going forward. I'll know that when I do publish my newsletter today. Maybe we're back at fair value of the S&P after this short run. That's why this will be such a very important newsletter. I'll be publishing it. It'll go out as early as I can get it out for tomorrow. You can go to GundersonCapital.com to get the 2 free weeks of that newsletter, GundersonCapital.com. Now, we have a lot of folks that are listening to us. We have our Saturday show, and we do this show Monday through Friday, and then we take the best of it, and we kind of do a week in review, and that's where we need to go now is our week in review of what took place this past week. But the big headline is technically the market went from a downtrend several weeks ago to a sideways or bottoming trend, and then better yet, it started to turn up. And, you know, I talk to people, they say, Bill, just tell me when it's safe to get back in. Well, you know, from a technical point of view, that occurred 2 weeks ago. And better yet, it followed on along this week. Now, we're in the third week of earnings season, all right? Every 4 quarters, we have an earnings season. And we're still expecting record earnings this year, 2023. And as it looks right now, we're looking for earnings that are going to be about 10% higher than last year. Now, I would say that this year, 2023 is baked into the cake of the market. The market looks ahead. The market is now looking to next year's earnings estimates. And believe it or not, I mean, as these companies report earnings and as these companies talk to analysts on a regular basis, we have a pretty good look into next year. And we're starting even to get an early glimpse into 2025. Okay. And that's what the market is trading on right now. So in this week's newsletter, I don't know if it's time to yet start publishing a 2025 target price, but we're definitely going to firm up our target price on the S&P for next year, 2023, and that's going to be critical, okay? So now we're about a third of the way through earnings season, maybe even more than that, 40%. About 70% of the companies out there have beat their earnings. Okay, that's good. Now, Barry, this recession talk. Yes, but Bill, we've just had 2 straight quarters of negative growth. The textbook says we are in a recession. That's true. But, Barry, you're not seeing layoffs. You know, you're right. Not seeing, just comment on that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to have a deep recession when you have, you know, essentially at full employment, or what some people historically would say even over full employment. So you haven't had a bunch of layoffs, which is what you usually see. And so, you know, that being said, even if you're in some slowing growth pattern, it usually doesn't last very long, or it won't be, you know, kind of recessions that we've seen in the past.
That, at least not yet, okay? It seems that the market has already taken this 2 quarters of down into account, has priced it in, and is now anxious and eager looking ahead. We don't have an earnings recession either. That's what I want to talk about when we come back. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. We'll be right back. Back here to this week's Week in Review, brought to you by Gunderson Capital Management. You know, a lot of people listen to us on the Saturday show. They, who are these guys? Well, I run a nationwide registered investment advisory firm. We're virtual. We have the radio show across the country. We have clients all over the country. I've been a professional money manager for the last 23 years. Barry Kite is a chartered financial analyst, a certified financial planner. He's been in the business for 20 years. I was there when the NASDAQ got crunched for 79% in the year 2000. That was a big valuation lesson. I was there in 2007, 2008, when the S&P went down 53%. I do believe there's times to be all in the market. That's most of the time. But there's also times to have your defense, a little bit of defense on the field. Therefore, I believe in active management versus passive management. This is not a passive world. This is a very active world with things happening all over the world in many cases that we've never seen before. And I have a hunch there's still a lot of more surprises out there coming in the coming years. But anyways, that means I believe in being an active manager, not just sitting there and doing nothing. At the same time, you can do too much, all right? So there's a fine line there. But doing nothing, for me, is not an option. When interest rates go down for 40 years and then they turn the corner and start to climb after 40 years, that's a sea change. And that had a massive impact on the market. It first went after the high PE stocks because a rising interest rate environment shrinks multiples, PE ratios, which had gotten extraordinarily high. I mean, the average over time is in the 17 area for the S&P. We got to 24. Well, the sell-off in the market brought it back in line, brought it down. During some weeks, we had it under 16 for a while. Now we've finally taken all of that excess valuation out of the market, and now we look to the other side of the equation, which is earnings. And so far, knock on wood, this earnings season has gone pretty well. We had some good ones this past week. We had a few stinkers, but for the most part, the stinking earnings reports come from bad companies, all right? The IBMs, the Intels of the world. That was the one I mentioned that kind of started the whole Silicon Valley and the NASDAQ and everything. Intel is no longer a leader. It has not been for a long time. It's been replaced. NVIDIA, AMD, others are leaders now where Intel once was a leader. But for the most part, the earnings from Google, the earnings from Apple, the earnings from Amazon, a lot of these big tech bellwether stocks were good this past week. And even a lot of the big industrial stocks like Ford and others had a pretty good week of earnings. Now, we still have a few weeks left of earnings season, but this was a big one. We had 125 of the 500 report this week. So in this week's newsletter, it's going to be critical to look at what this past week has done to the estimates. The market looks forward. The market has already priced in the year we're in right now. It's already priced it in. It's priced in the two quarters of recession. It's priced in the inflation. It's priced in the interest rate hikes, believe it or not, by the Fed. And it's already pretty much got a pretty good handle for where the earnings will be this year, and that's priced in. Now the market is looking to next year's earnings estimates. There is going to be, because, you know, a lot of these companies, almost all of them, a lot of the companies this time around, Barry, they came in and they got, and they you know, beat earnings by a little bit, or in some cases, Microsoft, for instance, missed their earnings estimates. So why did it soar this week? Because they guided higher, okay? That just shows you that the market looks forward. When a company guides higher, that's a really good thing. Expectations just went up. The stock follows almost immediately. So that's why the market now is looking ahead to next year's earnings, okay? So the stock market, you know, it came through earnings season pretty well. We had the excess shaken out of the market in the way of valuation. We had a 34% drop in the NASDAQ, and now the NASDAQ has bottomed out and is headed back up the other way. But it's still a stock picker's market. You have to be in the companies. You don't, certainly don't want to own Teladoc. You don't want to own Roku. You don't want to own some of these other, Shopify, some of these other stocks that are really struggling right now because of inflation, probably. That's a big issue. Not being able to get good help, that's another issue. We've had that several companies say, we can't get enough, you know, good qualified labor to make our products. That's a big problem right now.
Well,
so anyway,
I think the fact the market's showing so much resilience and you know, maintaining this bottoming pattern during, you know, especially take a week like this week where we've got, you know, just a plethora of, you know, not just earning news but also economic news. You had the, you know, Fed raise 75 basis points in the middle of the week. That seemed like almost a non-story to a certain extent. you know,
yes.
The market really didn't. Certainly didn't react unfavorably to that. And then, of course, the next day on Thursday, we had the negative GDP reading, which, you know, the market took in stride. And so it's and then, of course, you come with the end of the day earnings yesterday after the close of Apple and Amazon, you know, very strong earnings. So it's just, I think it just shows kind of some of the resiliency of what's, of how the market's reacted lately.
Yes, and the resiliency of the companies to be able to adjust to very rapidly changing times, especially now Walmart, okay, not so much. They've got trouble, and others have trouble. Those are the ones you want to avoid. We would have really been in trouble if earnings would have started to fall apart. That's my big comment point I want to make right here. We're not seeing an earnings recession. Okay, GDP is one thing. That's your gross domestic product of all your industries and how much the country produced. But the corporate earnings, I mean, they're different, okay? And we're not seeing a recession in the corporate earnings. We're seeing a 10% increase versus last year. Right now, that's what's expected. And then next year, at least as of now, we're expecting those earnings to continue to grow. So we're not seeing a recession in earnings. So you can now enter, you know, back into the market. That started to happen 2 or 3 weeks ago. We had inverse funds in place to protect us. We were nervous about this coming earnings season. We always put in a safety net. You know, we don't want to see 60, 70% losses like we saw back in 2000 or 53% losses like we saw back in 08 and 09. And that possibility was there. But this earnings season kind of pointed out, you know, these companies have adjusted pretty well for the most part, not all of them, but most of them. And they're keeping that earnings growth intact. Now, the bond market's a different thing. We think it's okay to own individual bonds, but bond funds, they've seen a rebound here the last couple of weeks, but it just seems to me, you know, the 10-year's now at 2.68, it seems to me like it's just got to head back up at some point in time with the inflation we're seeing and with the Fed raising interest rates. Barry, there's usually a pretty substantial gap between the Fed fund rate and the 10-year Treasury. There's not much of a gap in there right now. Don't you think that gap's going to widen again?
Yeah, I mean, it has to at some point, right? I mean, the deal is you know, is you get a better rate, right? I mean, by lending money short term than you do long term, right? I mean, it should be the other way around. If I'm gonna lend you money for 30 years, well, there should be a big gap, right, between that 30-year number and the 1-year number, right? Because I know, at least 1 year from now, you're going to give me my money back, right? It's going to take you 30 years, right, to give me my money back.
A lot
the
more
scenario.
Risk there,
right? And so, when you get these times of inverted curves, I'd like to go back in history. I don't think there's my guess is they don't, on average, right? They don't last very long. Maybe we had one period, who knows, in the during the Depression or that type of thing, where you could have a mismatch for an extended period of time, but. You know, it just tends just to not occur. Like, the math just doesn't work over time.
Yeah, so we're not real keen on the bond market right now, the bond funds especially. I don't care what asset allocation says, the model, we don't follow that model. That's based on age only. It doesn't take into account conditions in the world. Okay, get this week's newsletter. We'll be back for the final segment. GundersonCapital.com. GundersonCapital.com. We'll be right back.
You gotta go where you wanna go. Do what you wanna do.
And welcome back here to the final segment of this week's Week in Review of the Best Stocks Now show, brought to you by Gunderson Capital Management, which is a nationwide virtual firm. I became a virtual firm a long time ago, way before COVID. I just thought it was better. I had my radio show was heard around the country. And I had a choice of opening up branches all across the country. And I just thought, you know what, the way technology is going and the way business is going, I can serve people better being where I am. I get in, my hours every day. I don't have to commute somewhere. I don't have people all over the country. We're centralized. We're centrally located pretty much. Although our office has got some in Scottsdale, but we're all virtual, okay? I have some in Georgia, South Carolina, where I am. But we have clients all over the country, a lot in California, a lot in Minnesota, a lot in Sarasota, a lot in Georgia, a lot in Atlanta, a lot in Texas, all over the country.
Hawaii.
A lot in Hawaii. You know, they must still play the show over there. So anyways, it makes it easy for you. If you're out there, you can make a Zoom call with us or a telephone call. Most of the people we've talked to this year, they're not real happy that their person didn't do anything when things started really going bad. Now, I don't know, you look at the extreme end of it, the high-end NASDAQ stocks just got whomped. I mean, they got clobbered. The Shopify's and the Teladoc's down 75, 80%. I mean, there's no excuse to not have some kind of a sell discipline as that takes place. And it was obvious as the Fed started to go on the warpath, that was going to be the railroad track, the first hit by the freight train coming around the railroad tracks driven by Jerome Powell at the Fed. Those interest rate hikes, they take out the highest PE stocks in the market. That was the number one place to get out of the way. We did that about a year and a half ago. We saw that coming. In 2020, that was the place to be. The speculative end, the innovation end. But the market goes through cycles. It goes through interest rate cycles. It goes through GDP cycles. It goes through inflation cycles. Now we're in an inflationary period in the market. We haven't seen that for 40 years. Oh, I remember back in 1982, I remember Gerald Ford running for president wearing his button that said, "Win." Well, it stood for whip inflation now. That's what it stood for because inflation was a monster. That was the Jimmy Carter years. We had interest rates up around 16, 17, 18%, runaway inflation. Paul Volcker had to put us into a recession. to finally cure that inflation. Now, we don't know if they've got inflation under control yet. We had a number on Friday that was hotter than expected, and that's the number that the Fed pretty much takes its cue from, not so much the CPI and the PPI. But now down at the bottom of all of this is earnings. And the earnings picture has remained the same. There's very little. Earnings continue to go. We're not seeing an earnings recession yet. It will happen at some point. And then your market is in big trouble when we start to see an earnings recession. We've also got a kind of a big election coming up in about 3 months. You would think that the current administration wants the market and the economy to look as good as it possibly can, even if they have to prop it up somewhat. You know, people get in a sour mood when they're paying $5 per gallon at the gas tank, when their 401k is getting crushed, and when they can't afford a ribeye steak now and again, you know, from the butcher shop. People are pretty grouchy, and they'll tend to vote out those incumbents, you know. So I got to believe that maybe this, you know, this bashing of the market, 34% in the NASDAQ. Now, the Dow only went down about 16%. That's because the Dow doesn't have the as high of P.E. stocks in it as the NASDAQ did. The NASDAQ was in the crosshairs of the freight train, and the bond market was in the crosshairs, and the digital currencies, which we don't like at all. Well, maybe you like them. Go ahead, play them. That's up to you. We just don't feel like we're more in the Warren Buffett camp, Charlie Munger camp, that just doesn't see the underlying value there. And, of course, they've been crushed. They were 66,000 at one time. Now they're 22,000. That's Bitcoin. So we don't really delve into that arena. We try to find the very best stocks now, given the environment we're in. You got to like the oil and gas stocks here at this level. Yes, we're transitioning. Yes, we're transitioning to a green future. But at the meantime, these ships coming in and out of our harbor, the military, the airports, the planes coming in and out of the airports, they're not going to run on wind and solar anytime soon. And you've seen what natural gas prices have done over in Europe. I mean, all-time highs. And so you got to like the refinery stocks. You've got to like the natural gas stocks. We own some European gasoline oil stocks. You can look at Seeking Alpha and get a feel for what we own now, how we feel about the market. We're in the top 2% of all the writers on Seeking Alpha. We got competition, 8,500 different people writing for them. And we're in the top 1.5%, actually, this week of all the writers. So you can go to Seeking Alpha and look up Bill Gunderson. Or you can get the newsletter, 2 free weeks. That only goes to my subscribers. I have a lot of do-it-yourselfers that follow me. Get the newsletter, 2 free weeks at GundersonCapital.com. Or you can set up an appointment with us, and we'll have a look at your portfolio. I had one guy, Barry, complain that I sold everything he owned. I said, no, that's because I didn't like anything he owned. And now I'm transitioning it over to stuff I do like. That's how we work here. All right, so, you know, there's a couple ways you can learn more about Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide virtual firm. Set up a telephone appointment, a Zoom appointment, or just have a look at the newsletter. The portfolios are all there. What we own is all there. The results are all there. We couldn't be any more transparent than that. And I got to handle a lot of the appointments while Barry was on vacation. I had a good time talking to people all across the country. And we'd like to hear from you. 855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST or GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.